1.02. Once again, Dahlia's stomach lurched as the craft's altitude altered rapidly, climbing at a sickeningly steep angle as the black cliff face drew closer with terrifying rapidity. Sulphurous fumes wreathed the top of the mountain and the craft plunged into them. Dahlia closed her eyes, expecting any moment to have her life ended as they smashed into the immovable mass of rock. At last, she opened her eyes when the feared impact didn't come and peered breathlessly through the transparent panel in the side of the craft. A sea of glowing red lava heaved and swelled beneath her, the volcanic heart of the planet bubbling up within the giant mountain. Her view of the volcano's caldera shimmered and danced in the incredible heat radiating from the lava. And though she was insulated from the unimaginable temperatures, Dahlia felt uncomfortably warm just looking at the molten rock.
"Asayamons," said Romu-31. "A dead volcano, brought back to life to serve the Mechanicum."
"It's incredible," breathed Dahlia, looking over to the far side of the caldera, where a huge industrial city structure, fashioned from what looked like blackened steel and stone, rose from the lava like the broadside of a submerged starship. Enormous gates steamed in the lava, and mighty pistons of gleaming ceramite hissed and groaned as they rose and fell. Billowing clouds of superheated steam roared and vaporized like the breath of a host of great dragons, and Dahlia saw that they were gaining height to fly over the bizarre structure. Closer now, she could truly appreciate its enormous size and complexity, a precise series of sluices, overflow channels and pressure gates to keep the lava in motion and circulating through the system that fed the incredible sight on the far side of the volcano. Guided down the flanks of the mountain in enormous chasms 100 meters wide, the lava from the volcano fed a vast artificially constructed lagoon, an inland sea of glowing, hissing, bubbling molten rock. Built upon this sea was the Magma City, and what a city it was. Dahlia's breath was snatched from her throat as she saw the mighty forge, surely the domain of Romu-31's master, Adept Coriel Zeth. All across the bubbling, flame-racked surface of the lava, blackened cylinder towers soared from the magma beside giant structures in the shapes of flat-topped pyramids that belched fire and steam. Twisting roadways, boulevards, open squares, wide platforms, and entire industrial complexes sat upon the raging heat of the lava in defiance of the awesome caged power of the planet's molten fire. A golden route traced a path towards a mighty structure of silver in the center of the colossal metropolis, but it was quickly lost to sight as the craft descended. Thick retaining walls of dark stone surrounded the lagoon, such that it resembled a lava-filled crater, and a colossal plain of sub-hives, hab-zones, landing fields, runways, control towers, and a vast container port filled the horizon behind it, abutting the cliff-like walls of the volcano. Continents of steel-sided containers sprawled outwards from the magma city, towering skyscrapers of materiel, weapons, ammunition, and supplies manufactured in the factories of Mars for the War Master's armies of conquest. Fleets of enormous vessels filled the skies over the port, rising and descending to the surface of Mars in a veritable procession of steel and retrofire. Each one was destined for worlds far distant from the solar system, and as valuable to the Great Crusade as any warrior or battleship. A forest of lifter cranes swung and groaned over the container port, their heavy, counterbalanced arms moving with leisurely speed in an intricate ballet as an army of servitors, loaders, and container skiffs packed the holds of the enormous bulk conveyors with as much as could physically be contained. Dahlia held on to the stanchion as the ship banked, heading towards a landing platform within the city, a glowing cross of light sitting on a boom of metal that jutted out into the lava. The view through the photomalleable steel rippled in the heat, and Dahlia found herself becoming nauseous with the disorientation. Romu-31 placed his stave against the wall, and once more the side of the vessel became opaque. The hull began to vibrate and screech as they descended through the blistering thermals.
"Do they ever have crashes here?"
asked Dahlia, knowing that such accidents could have no survivors.
"I mean, have any ships gone into the lava?"
"Sometimes," said Romeo 31. It is best not to think of it.
Too late,
muttered Dahlia, as the noises of the ship's engines changed in pitch from a low rumble to a high-pitched shriek. Attitude thrusters firing to correct the riptide air currents. The pilot was clearly having difficulty in lowering their ship to the landing platform, and Dahlia closed her eyes, trying not to think of what would happen if they went into the lava. She tried not to picture the lava searing the meat from her bones, the fumes choking her, and the agonizing pain of watching her body disintegrate in front of her. Of course, she would not live long enough to experience these things, but her mind delighted in tormenting her with these dreadful visions of catastrophe. Dahlia took a deep breath and forced the images from her mind, fighting to keep them from overwhelming her. She felt a thump on the underside of the craft, and her eyes flashed open.
What was that? Has something gone wrong?
Romeo 31 looked at her strangely, and though the bronze mask concealed his features, Dahlia could sense his amusement at her panic.
No, he said. We have simply landed.
Dahlia let out a shuddering sigh of relief, pathetically grateful to be on terra firma once again. Though, should that more properly be Mars firma? Having said that, how solid could the ground be considered when it was somehow supported on an ocean of liquid rock that could burn her to cinders in the blink of an eye? A hiss of escaping gases drew her attention to the ramp at the rear of the vessel as it began to lower with a squeal of pistons. A wall of hot air rushed to fill the compartment, and Dahlia gasped at the sudden heat. Sweat immediately prickled on her brow, and her mouth dried of saliva in an instant.
"Thrown alive, it's hot," she said.
"Be thankful for the heat exchangers and gas separators," said Romeo 31. "You would be overcome by the temperature and fumes of this place in moments without them."
Dahlia nodded, following Romeo 31 from the interior of the starship. The other members of his squad moved in behind her as she made her way down the ramp, shielding her eyes from the vivid glare of the lava lagoon and the brightness of the rust-colored sky. After a day or so in the belly of a starship, she realized how starved of the sight of the sky she had been. Even as a scribe in the bowels of the Librarium Technologica, she had been able to see a sliver of sky through the high liturgical windows. The sky here was low and threatening, the air thick and heavy with particulate matter billowing upwards from flame-wreathed refineries in the far distance. Though she knew the clouds gathering in the distance were not those of weather patterns, but pollution, she could not help but shiver to see them squatting on the horizon like a quiescent threat. High railings surrounded the landing platform, and tall silver poles topped with buzzing, hissing machinery punctuated the barrier every few meters. The heat exchangers and gas separators Romeo 31 had spoken of, she presumed. A swirling cloud of steam surrounded each one, and dripping pipes ran the length of each pole, vanishing into the decking of the platform to dissipate their heat elsewhere.
"It must take vast amounts of energy to disperse such huge quantities of heat," she said,
pointing at the machines on the silver poles.
"What method do you use to filter the harmful gases from the air? Synthetic membranes? Adsorption? Or cryogenic distillation?"
"You know of such things?" asked Romeo 31.
"Well, I've read about them," explained Dahlia. "A number of the old texts from the ruins in the American deserts mentioned them, and, as with everything I read,
it slotted home in the archive of your memory as a fact to be recovered at a later date."
"I guess so,"
said Dahlia, faintly embarrassed by the reverent tone she heard in his voice. She looked away from him as she saw an ochre-skinned vehicle emerge from the nearest structure, a tall tower of black metal, and make its way along the boom towards them. It moved on a number of thin, stilt-like legs, moving with a quirky mechanical gait, like a stubby centipede. As it drew nearer, she saw the wide-bodied mass of a servitor fused and hard-wired into the front section where one might otherwise expect a driver to sit. The vehicle came to a halt beside them, the multitude of legs twisting it around on its central axis and lowering it to the deck plates. Romeo 31 opened a door in the side of the vehicle and indicated that Dahlia should climb aboard. She stepped onto the centipede vehicle and took a seat on the metal bench along its side, feeling a thrill travel through her at the thought of making a journey on such an outlandish mode of transport. Romeo 31 joined her,
but the remaining mechanic and protectors did not board.
"Where are we going?"
asked Dahlia, as the vehicle rose up onto its legs once again and set off with a scuttling, side-to-side motion towards the dark tower.
"We are going to see Adept Zeth," said Romeo 31. "She is most anxious to meet you."
"Me? Why? I don't understand. What does she want with me?"
"Enough questions, Dahlia Cythera," cautioned Romeo 31, not unkindly. "Adept Zeth does nothing without purpose, and you are here to serve that purpose. What manner your service will take is for her to decide."
The walking vehicle drew near the tower of black metal, and as Dahlia looked back towards the gathering clouds, a sliver of fear wormed its way past her wonder at all the new and incredible sights. She had been brought to Mars with a purpose in mind. But what might that purpose be, and would she live to regret the journey? The shadow of the tower swallowed her, and Dahlia shivered, despite the awful heat. Maven's first warning was the transformer exploding in a cascade of flames and whipping electrical discharge. A hammering volley of laser fire, like 100 lightning bolts ripping from the rocks, soared through the looped coils of metal and liquefied them in an instant. His display dimmed to protect him from blindness, but before the transformer blew, he saw the outline of the aggressor. Easily as huge as Aquitos Bellum, it was spherical and heavily armored, a pair of monstrous weapon arms at its sides and a myriad of flexible metallic tentacles crouched over its shoulders like scorpions' tails. A trio of convex blisters glowed like baleful eyes on its front, a fiery yellow glow burning from them with a hateful, dead light. The white heat of the explosion obscured the unknown attacker, and by the time the glow had diminished and the knight's auto-senses had recovered, the war machine had vanished. With a thought, Aquitos Bellum was on a war footing. Weapon generators firing from idle to active, and the high-energy cells that drove his knight switching to battle mode. He immediately stepped his knight to one side, crouching low as he saw scores of figures pouring from the rocks with weapons raised. His eyes narrowed as he recognized them as protector squads, servants of the Adepts of Mars. Things were really getting out of hand.
"Stator! Cronus! Are you getting this?"
"Affirmative," barked Stator.
"Engage enemy forces at will. We will be with you directly."
"Enemy forces?" hissed Maven.
"They're protectors."
"And they are attacking a facility we are duty-bound to protect. Now fight!"
Maven cursed under his breath and shrugged. The huge bulk of Aquitos Bellum attempting to match the gesture as he marched the machine into battle. He leaned forward in his command seat, lifting his arms and twisting his head as he sought out the enemy war machine. What was it, he wondered? Some new form of battle robot or servitor-manned automaton? Maven shivered as he remembered the dead light in the machine's sensor blisters, feeling as though it had been looking at him, assessing him, and then dismissing him. That thought alone angered him, and he could feel the intemperate fury of Aquitos Bellum meshing with him in a desire to do harm to the attackers. The protectors in grey cloaks were advancing with relentless pace through the reactor complex, gunning down unresisting servitors with quick bursts of laser fire, and engaging Maximal's protectors as they sought to defend their master's holdings. Maven unleashed a torrent of lasfire from his right arm, and the ground erupted in a storm of metal and earth. The ruin of the enemy corpses geezed upwards, a knot of attackers reduced to puffs of exploding meat and boiled blood. A flurry of gunfire rippled towards him, and he flinched as he felt a power field flash out of existence. Like a titan, a knight had a finite bank of energy shields to protect it, but where a titan's reactor could replenish its shield strength in time, the knight's battery could not. Aquitos Bellum was effectively immune to most individual weapons, but the protectors were combining their fire with accuracy of timing that spoke of a communal battle link. Another shield winked out of existence, and Maven turned his war machine to face the new threat. A cadre of protectors armed with long-barreled high-energy weapons. Maven saw silver bands around each protector's skull, recognizing the hard-wired component of a targeting web. He stepped sideways as a blistering beam of light leapt from each of the protector's weapons and achieved confluence where he had been standing not a moment before. He had seconds to act. Maven's weapons blazed in a hurricane of light,
enveloping the protectors in a firestorm that obliterated them in an instant and left virtually no remains. He pushed onwards, past the flaming wreckage of the transformer as it spat arcs of lightning and secondary explosions detonated within its ruined shape. Where the hell had the war machine that had done this gone? And where, in the name of Taranis, were Stator and Cronus? An explosion mushroomed skyward from deeper within the complex, and Maven turned Equitos Bellum towards it, the heavy, thudding strides of the knight shaking the ground with the weight of its tread. Another explosion roared, and Maven guided his knight around the curve of the reactor dome to see his foe with its back to him, unleashing solid spears of plasma flame that ripped through the armored skin of the fusion reactor's dome. The machine's bulk was enormous, almost as wide as it was tall, and it was equipped with a fearsome array of weapons. Some Maven recognized, and some that were a mystery to him. Where a knight's mode of locomotion was its legs, this machine was mounted on a heavy track unit, blood and oil coating it, where it had crushed unfortunate servitors beneath its bulk. Sheets of molten armor cascaded like burnt paper from the flanks of the reactor dome, and Maven saw it wouldn't be long before the shielding around the caged fury of the fusion reactions within would be breached. Screaming sirens and flashing emergency lights warned of impending doom. Despite the heavy crash of his knight's footfalls, Maven didn't think his foe knew he was there. Maven siphoned power from non-essential systems as he prepared to open fire. One of the metallic weapon tentacles swiveled around on its mounting, and Maven had the sick feeling that it was looking right at him. Instantly, the rest of the weapon arms, not already reducing the armor plating on the reactor to vaporized slag, whipped around to face him. Maven opened fire at the same time as the attacking war machine, his lasers impacting on a number of power fields before tearing one of the weapon arms from its mounting. The return fire struck Equitos Bellum full in the chest, collapsing the last power field and ripping through its armor. Agony roared up through the manifold, and Maven screamed, his hands jerking towards his chest as though the wound had been done to his own flesh. The knight staggered, and Maven fought to control its motion through the mist of jarring pain that seared through his every nerve ending. He wrenched his consciousness from the damage done to Equitos Bellum and felt his vision clear as he saw the enemy war machine preparing to fire again. Maven sidestepped and lowered his shoulder as another rippling beam of light seared towards him, burning through the edge of his shoulder armor. He flinched, but the damage was superficial, and he locked in with his weapon arm, unleashing a stream of laser fire at his enemy's back.
"Got you!"
he shouted as the impacts marched over the machine. The shout died in his throat as he saw that his shots had done absolutely no damage. A rippling sheath of invisible energy surrounded the machine, where none had existed a moment before. Only one explanation presented itself. The machine was void protected.
"Damn it!"
he hissed, and his hesitation almost killed him, as the machine spun around on its axis and took time out from its unraveling of the reactor's armor to fire on him. Dazzling lasers sleeted past him, and Maven desperately walked his knight back out of the line of fire. Flames boomed to life around him as fuel stores exploded, and he felt the heat wash over his mount. A lucky shot grazed the pilot's compartment, and a sharp crack sliced down through his vision. Maven screamed in pain, his hand reaching up to his eyes, where it felt as though a hot needle had been shoved through to the back of his skull. His vision blurred, but he kept moving, backwards and from side to side, to throw off his assailant's aim. Fresh streams of laser fire seared the air around him, but none touched him, and as the pain of Equitos Bellum's wounding diminished, he dodged the machine's incoming shots, its fire patterns following textbook sweeps. But Raph Maven was anything but textbook. He swung his knight around the corner of the reactor, sweat streaming down his face and a thin trickle of blood dripping from his nose.
"Stator! Cronus!" he yelled. "Where in Arras's name are you?"
Then the reactor exploded. The stilt-walking vehicle moved through a city of wonders and miracles. Everywhere Dahlia looked, she saw something new and incredible. Once lost in the midst of the towers and forges, she realized she had never seen anything like the domain of Kareel Zeth, its design and scale quite beyond anything she had imagined before. Though the Imperial Palace on Terra was much, much larger, She appreciated that the Emperor's fastness was not so much a piece of architecture, but rather a handcrafted landmass built upon the world's tallest mountains. Even on the rare moments she had been permitted to venture beyond the confines of the Librarium, she had only ever seen a fragment of the palace's majesty. But this place she had seen in its entirety. Even then, she suspected that what she had seen from the air wasn't the whole story. Romeo 31 kept his counsel throughout the journey, content to watch the spires and smoke-belching furnaces pass without comment. Nor was this a city without an organic component, for thousands paraded through its razor-straight thoroughfares and shining boulevards. Hooded menials, grey-skinned servitors, and glittering, hollow-wreathed calculi mingled on the metal streets of the Magma City. Robed tech adepts moved like royalty through the crowds, carried on floating palanquins or wheeled chariots of golden metal, or borne aloft on what looked like gilded theatre boxes with slender stilt legs. All of them bore the number grid symbol of Adept Zeth somewhere about their person. How any of them didn't collide was a mystery to Dahlia, though she presumed that each one would have some kind of onboard navigational system, which linked to a central network that monitored speeds, trajectories, and potential collisions. She shook her head free of the thought and forced herself to concentrate on enjoying the journey. Too often she was being distracted when she saw something new and incredible. Her thoughts would seize on this unknown factor, searching her memory for something similar before sending the creative part of her mind into a freewheeling spin as she attempted to account for the technological explanation of this new phenomenon. They were heading for the center of the Magma City. That much was obvious. The unmoving, unblinking servitor fused with the vehicle's control mechanisms, conveying them unerringly through the heaving mass of bodies. Their course took them onto the golden boulevard she had seen from the air, its sides lined with statues and thronged with robed acolytes. At the far end, Dahlia saw a towering structure of what looked like bright silver or chrome. As if fashioned from precisely machined blocks of silver steel, the forge was etched with geometric patterns like those of a circuit diagram, though Dahlia had no idea what manner of circuit was described in its design. The servitor increased the speed of their vehicle, and the enormous building soon grew in stature until Dahlia's neck hurt with craning to look up at its blocky enormity. A portion of the wall at the base of the forge slid apart, and sections of the building seemed to retreat within its structure, forming a gleaming ramp that led up to a vast portico halfway up the building's side. Dahlia gripped the handrail as their vehicle began the ascent, looking behind her as the ramp disappeared as soon as they passed. The portico loomed large above them, and now she truly appreciated how enormous it was, each column fashioned in the shape of an enormous piston and capped with cog-shaped capitals. The entire building was designed as if it were a moving machine, and for all Dahlia knew, perhaps it was. At last the vehicle leveled out, and the clacking of its many legs ceased as it came to a halt on the portico's wide plinth. The floor was milky white marble, with dark veins running through it, and the columns towered above her. The underside of the pediment was decorated with unknown equations and diagrams picked out in glittering mosaics of gold. The sheer visual splendor was overwhelming. A wall of bronze doors led into the mighty structure. All were open, and from them poured a host of robed figures. Each wore its hood drawn forward to cover its head, and each wore the number grid of Adept Zeth as a veil. Many carried strange devices in open boxes or upon their backs. Leading the figures was a tall, slender adept with a lithe, muscular physique and a cloak of golden-red bronze that billowed behind her in the swirls of hot air. Without introduction, Dahlia knew that this must be the mistress of the Magma City, Adept Coriel Zeth. Her body was sheathed in a flexible skin of bronze armor, her attire more like that of a warrior woman than a master of technology. Her features were invisible, hidden behind a studded head mask and opaque goggles. Puffs of steam exhaled from a rebreather mask, and a skirt of bronze mail hung low over her shapely armored legs. Though her body armor obscured all traces of Zeth's humanity, there was no doubt as to her sex. Every curve and every plate of armor had been designed to enhance her natural form. Her slender waist, the curve of her thighs, and the swell of her breasts. Fully a third of a meter taller than Dahlia, Adept Zeth approached, and a delicate mist of atomized perfume came with her. She leaned down to stare at Dahlia, the glossy black orbs of her goggles like those of an insect, regarding some interesting morsel that had just wandered into its lair. Zeth's head cocked to one side, and a burst of static hissed from the bronze mesh to either side of her rebreather. Moments passed before Dahlia realized that the static had been directed at her, a blurted hash of machine noise, intelligible to the binaric fluent.
"I can't understand you," she said. "I don't speak lingua technis."
Zeth nodded, and her head twitched as though a switch had flicked inside it.
"What relationship does the ideal gas law represent?" asked Zeth,
her voice rasping and the words sounding as though they had been dredged up from a little-used repository of linguistic memory. Of all the welcomes, this was one Dahlia had not anticipated. She closed her eyes, casting her mind back to one of the first books she had transcribed in the librarium, a textbook recovered from beneath a ruined tech fortress of the Indonesic block.
"It describes the relationship between pressure and volume within a closed system," said Dahlia,
the words recited by rote from memory.
"For a fixed amount of gas kept at a fixed temperature, the pressure and volume are inversely proportional."
"Very good.
I am Adept Coriel Zeth, and you are Dahlia Cythera. Welcome to my forge." "Thank you," said Dahlia. "It's very impressive. Did it take long to build?"
Zeth looked her up and down, the sound of electronic laughter crackling from her voice unit. She nodded.
"It did, indeed. Many centuries of work were needed to build this forge, but even now it is not complete."
"It isn't? It looks complete."
"From without, perhaps. But within there is much yet to be achieved," said Zeth,
her delivery growing more fluent as she spoke.
"And that is where you come in."
"How do you even know me?"
"I know a great deal about you,"
said Adept Zeth, looking at the space above Dahlia's head.
"You are the only daughter of Tethys and Moraria Cythera, both deceased. You were born in Medicaid Block IF-55 of the Ural Collective 17 years, 3 months, 4 days, 6 hours, and 15 minutes ago. You were trained to read and write at age 3, indentured to the Imperial Scriptorium aged 6, and trained in the art of transcription aged 9. You were apprenticed to Magos Ludd aged 12 and assigned to the Hall of Transcription aged 15. You have 6 commendations for accuracy, 12 citations for inciting behavior deemed to be incompatible with working practices, and 1 instance of imprisonment for violating the laws of divine complexity."
Dahlia looked up, half expecting to see illuminated letters displaying her life story for Adept Zeth. She saw nothing, but it was clear from the tone of Zeth's voice that she was reading these facts from somewhere.
"How do you know all that?" she asked.
Zeth reached down and brushed a metallic fingertip across Dahlia's cheek, and she felt a warm glow as the Electu implanted beneath her skin upon her induction to the Hall of Transcription came to life. She reached up and placed a hand on her skin.
"You can read my Electu?"
"Yes, but I can discern much more than simple biographical knowledge," replied Zeth. "All data can be read, presented, and transferred with a glance. Though invisible to you, I see a liminal skein of data filling the air around you, each ghost of light a fact of your life. I can see everything about you, all the things that make you a person in the eyes of the Imperium."
"I've never heard of anything like that."
"I am not surprised," said Zeth with a trace of pride.
"It is a function of data retrieval and transfer that I have only recently developed, though I have great hopes for its eventual employment throughout the Imperium. But I did not bring you to my forge only to impress you with my technological developments. I brought you here because I believe your understanding of machines and technology runs parallel to mine."
"What do you mean?"
"The Martian priesthood is an ancient organization, and is learned in the ways of technology, but Our grasp of such things is limited by blind adherence to dogma, tradition, and repetition. I believe that our future lies in the understanding of technology, that only by experimentation, invention, and research will our progress be assured. This view is not widely held on Mars.
Why not? It seems perfectly sensible to me.
Zeth made the crackling, static laugh again. That is why I sought you out, Dahlia. You have a skill I believe will prove very valuable to me, but one that others will fear.
What skill's that?
You understand why machines work, said Zeth. You know the principles by which they function and the science behind their operation. I accessed the schematics of what you did to your cogitator station and followed the methodology you employed upon the circuitry. It was quite brilliant.
I didn't really do anything special, said Dahlia modestly.
I just saw how I could make it work faster and more efficiently. Anyone could have done it if they'd put their mind to it.
And that is why you are special, replied Zeth. Few could have made the mental leaps to see the things you saw, and even fewer would dare. To many of the Martian priesthood, you are a very dangerous individual indeed.
Dangerous? How?
Asked Dahlia, quite taken aback by the notion that she might be thought of as a danger to anyone, let alone the priests of the Mechanicum.
Mars enjoys a preeminent position within the Imperium, thanks to our grip on technology, continued Zeth. Many of my fellow adepts fear the consequences of what might happen were that advantage to slip beyond their control.
Oh, said Dahlia. So, what is it you want from me?
Adept Zeth drew herself up to her full height, the bronze of her armored skin gleaming red in the reflected glow of the orange skies.
You will be part of the salvation of Mars, she said. With your help, I will perfect my greatest work, the Akashic Reader.